you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
This is the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. I'm Jason Goff, and I am joined by Rob Schaefer, Casey Johnson, and Sam Smith. Coming up on the show, we'll discuss the Lakers championship run. We'll discuss the bubble. Billy Donovan is clearing the decks and bringing in all new assistants. And we'll talk about the evolution of basketball.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Welcome into another episode of the Bulls Talk Podcast. I am Jason Goff, and I am joined by my teammates, Casey Johnson and Rob Schaefer from NBC Sports Chicago and NBCSportsChicago.com. And we are joined by a piece of Bulls and NBA and Chicago media history. Anytime we get a chance to talk to Sam Smith, ladies and gentlemen, we cherish those moments. Sam, thank you so much for joining us. This will be an open discussion, not only on the Bulls, but what we took in this past week or so in the NBA Finals. But how are you, sir?
I'm good, thanks. I'm glad to participate. I was telling you, I'm available, I think, till February, March. When's the season starting?
It was last night, guys. It dawned on me at the very end when the Lakers are jumping around and, you know, they're celebrating their championship. This season started for anyone covering the Bulls, you know, first game, October 7th, 2019. And here we are, you know, a full 360 plus days later, and the season is coming to an end. Sam, when we look back on this, not just historically, but personally for you, what will you think and say and know about this season? Obviously, there's been mothers aside from the pandemic. Obviously, that's a big part of it. But what's stuck out to you about this season?
One thing that'll stand out is that Adam Silver eliminated a quarter of the league, including the Bulls. So that's one element. So if I'm LeBron James, I feel like he can only claim three quarters of a title this year, because 8 teams were not allowed to finish their season. So it seems like an incomplete season. And also it occurred to me last night that Dwight Howard finally delivered a title to Orlando. Something he said he would do many years ago. So I was excited about that element as well. So there are just so many things and excitement. Obviously it's an extraordinary circumstance because of the, you know, a year, calendar year, as you mentioned, and, you know, stopping and starting, doing all in one place. And so you could make judge arguments about, well, it was harder because of this, but it was easier because of that. But it, you know, like the lockout seasons in 99 and 11, you know, it'll just stand on its own for what it was. You know, the Lakers in the end, you know, outlasted and beat all the other teams. And so they, you know, deserve to be the champion, and they're a deserving champion. It was just hard. It was hard to keep up because it occurred when so much else was going on.
Yeah.
Between, you know, baseball playoffs, NFL, I know Casey's watching golf constantly, so it detracted from June when it ought to be. But you know, beyond that, they finally got down the playing toward the end. But you know, I thought a lot of the basketball was really lazy. the way they just went, you know, arc to arc, pulled up and shot threes and sort of trotted back. The last couple of playoff games got a lot better. You know, finally the Lakers last night woke up and said, you know what? We've got six guys taller than anybody on their team. Let's go to the basket for a change. And so, you know, I think that is something that will be adjudicated over the years. And I'm not a big fan of the way the game has evolved, you know, with all the perimeter shooting. Not that I'm against threes, mm-hmm. just that the extent of it when you see teams, you know, like Boston when they were losing, just sort of pull up, shoot threes, and nobody goes to the basket. They back up, but that's not the question you asked me. I just had to say it.
No, I can dig
it. I don't really remember what the question was that he asked you, Sam. That was like the longest answer ever.
You know I don't talk in sound bites. That's why no one ever invites me on these things.
No, don't do that. Don't do that.
This is a podcast. We got all day, brother. But hey,
that's your problem.
what I would say, the headline in that, Sam, for my takeaway there is that you think the Bulls could have beat the Lakers in the finals because you said that they didn't, you know, play against the full state of the league, but I digress. No, here's the thing that I say about the people saying there's an asterisk to this final, and I think Sam, you make a good point about how this is just a standalone event. No one knows what it was like to be in the bubble for that long, except the teams that were down there that long. So it's an accomplishment and achievement in that context. And also the last thing I'd say is, you know, they still beat every opponent in front of them. They're still the champion. I don't care. You can asterisk as much as you want. The Lakers were the best team in the NBA restarts. They beat every opponent in front of them and probably were, you know, picked by a lot of people in the preseason to be champions anyway. So all credit to them. I think obviously LeBron and AD were a good match and they deserve to be champion.
Rob, your thoughts on what you've consumed the last couple of weeks as far as finals basketball and playoff basketball and the season finally coming to an end?
Yeah, I don't know how I follow all that, but I thought it was an entertaining playoff. I don't have a ton to add other than I congratulate Los Angeles for their 12th NBA championship. I think that's a big accomplishment for that city. I think you're right, Casey, about it being an achievement in its own right. You know, Mark Eversley, when we talked to him a couple weeks ago, he even talked about the mental rigors of the Bulls bubble. I mean, imagine being down in Orlando for over 100 days. It's an interesting debate whether you put an asterisk on it or not. At the end of the day, when I think of this season, it'll probably just be LeBron dominated. The takeaways that I have of it, which seems to be how it was destined to be. It feels kind of fitting and poetic that such a random scattershot all over the place year ends as inevitable seeming as it did. So that's what I'll remember. And a sincere congratulations to the league and everybody involved in putting on the bubble and covering it and everything along those lines. It really is a feat, you know, all jokes aside. And I was grateful that they were able to put it on and not, you know, at the same time, not shy away from some of the grander moments going on in the world and kind of embrace that aspect of it and shine a light on those things, live up to that. So I don't know. I thought there was a lot to love about it. I can't complain for having gotten to experience the end of this basketball season. Now we just wait for whenever the next one starts.
Yeah, I agree with you, Rob. The execution of what we just witnessed, I thought, was damn near flawless in terms of having that many people, you know, who were also working on the grounds and making sure that the testing was going on, and not just to mention the organizations and the players and the broadcasting, you know, entities. I mean, this was a big deal and they pulled it off. And, you know, the biggest news that came out of it were two bench players, really, right? Lou Williams and Daniel House in terms of protocol and some of the other things. And as you mentioned, them using their voices to affect whatever change they feel that they can affect from a bubble in Orlando while their platform is still beaming out to millions across the world. I want to ask you this, Sam. You've covered some of the greats in this sports history. And, you know, we already did the podcast on how you should go about the Michael Jordan, LeBron debate. I choose not to try. Well, I try not to engage in it anymore in terms of who's better and who's worse, because I feel like, you know, that's not the way I want to consume it going forward. But today, I you know, when you celebrate or when you you talk about a championship involving LeBron James, immediately the Michael Jordan stuff comes out, whether you like it or not. How do you choose to consume LeBron James's career? As a guy who covered Michael Jordan, as a guy who's covered LeBron James, as a guy who's covered some of the greats that this game has ever seen, how do you consume this next great career?
In more books than LeBron, I guess. Obviously, you know, that's you guys called and you mentioned and we know, you know, every time LeBron wins now or gets to the finals, whatever the occasion might be, it becomes this inevitable debate. And, you know, I'm sure it's been on ESPN all day and any number of places. And it probably becomes tiresome, you know, because of the repetitive nature of it. And obviously, the you know, because it's just personal opinion and it's subjective, it's not something, that could be classified, scientifically. But this is the way I sort of mentioned something about it the other day when I was answering, you know, some Q&A sort of offhand. But the difference, and it's, you know, the difference to me, it's not, it's, I remember in 93, early in that season, 93, 94, the first season after Jordan left, Kevin McHale, I think, was coaching Minnesota then. And I know it was McHale. So obviously all that season, the Bulls game was, you know, Michael's not here. What's going to happen? What do now? And McHale, who's always great, you know, he's great on TV, he said, look, 5 years from now, nobody will remember his name. And we didn't think he was coming back. But McHale's point was, there's always somebody great who comes along next, being they can, you know, from in the history of the game, you know, from Elgin to Oscar to Wilt, West, on down, Kareem, whatever. And whatever next generation, you know, sees that guy, generally appreciates him. You know, there's a whole generation of fans were saying, well, you know, Kobe's better because they didn't see Michael as much as they saw Kobe. And so it comes down to basketball achievement. So there'll be somebody, LeBron probably, you know, his health being remarkable, will probably be able to play at a high level and you know, exceed Kareem's all-time scoring lead. But somebody will come along. Somebody will come along, and basketball-wise, will achieve that. What separates Jordan and a few others, Babe Ruth, Ali, is the impact on society that Michael had. Michael truly had, you know, in clothing, in looks, in people just wanting to see it. As great as LeBron is, people don't turn on to just, I'm going to see what LeBron's going to do next. Great player and everything. Don't take anything away. One of the, you know, top five or six of all time, whatever number you decide in, you know, in your listing. But he doesn't transcend the game like Michael did, like Babe Ruth did in his time, like Ali, I added Jackie Robinson in my own list, you know, because of the effect they had on people and the effect they had on non-sports fans. And there's been no basketball figure that I've been watching since, you know, Wilt and Russell, and saw those guys play, and Oscar. And there's no figure in basketball in this 70 years or whatever that I could point to and has had a bigger impact on society and the world and the game than Michael Jordan. So whenever the debate comes to that, it's easy for me to choose, say it's Jordan, because it's not about he's got six titles and he's got four and every time he went and there's all these statistical breakdowns, and you can pick out, you can cherry pick any stat you want and pick one over the other. That's fine. But you, with me, you can't surpass what Jordan meant, no matter nobody wants to be like LeBron. Nobody can be like LeBron. He's such a phenomenal physical figure. It's amazing. But that was like Wilt. You know, Wilt used to say, I just remember Wilt would always complain about nobody likes Goliath. And Wilt was not a popular figure. The irony was back then, Russell was such a miserable person to the media that they didn't like Russell. They liked Wilt, but so it was an ambivalence, with that, what was always complaining about not being appreciated enough, even though he was always the one who was more, more accessible to the media, and Russell was always difficult to deal with, but was always with the most successful team. And then if you want to just break down numbers, neither Michael or, LeBron has what Russell does as far as wins, and those Celtics guys has what Wilt did as far as scoring and dominance in the game, and don't have what Kareem does as far as, as far as all-time scoring records. So, there's so many ways to judge it. But, we're always going to be protective of Jordan. And to me, that's always the best case you could make about Jordan, because he had, such a transcendent impact that LeBron really can have or hasn't had.
It's funny because the way I asked you the question was, how do you consume his career? And we got to talking about Mike and talking about Wilt and Bill Russell and all the accomplishments and accolades. But in terms of the way maybe you watch Magic Johnson, or the way that you watch someone who wasn't Michael Jordan, what do you think stands out? And if you were to close the book, and it's not closed, obviously, he's got a couple more seasons, a few more seasons to play, we'll see. But what about his game do you enjoy either covering or watching the most?
You're talking about LeBron, right?
Yeah, that's what we've been talking about.
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of LeBron. Always have been, and it's sort of his overall dominance of the game. The player that most reminds me of that is Oscar Robertson. Now, Oscar wasn't as successful as much, and LeBron wouldn't have been in a similar situation. Oscar was competing against the greatest dynasty of all time with the Celtics, 11 titles in 13 years, 8 in a row, they got 8 Hall of Famers on the team at the same time or something. And he wasn't allowed to add anybody. In fact, there was one, and he played for, it's never mentioned much, but it was really a very racist franchise. Owned by the mob, actually. And it was one year where they literally had gone over their quota of black players, and they traded, but it was the best chance year they had to beat the Celtics in that run of 8 straight. And I think they traded Bob Boozer in the middle of the season for a white player because the community was complaining about too many black players on the team. And the white player was not, he was just, a role player kind of guy. Boozer was an all-star, and it severely lessened their ability. LeBron was not able to win until he was able to pair himself up with, Wade and Bosh, Anthony Davis now, whatever the case. And I don't have any issue with that. I think that's fine. I'm glad the players have the freedom to do that. They were denied it for so many years, and I encourage that. I liked when Kevin Durant went to Golden State. I had no problem with that. He was condemned for it or whatever, and I think that was great. He had to choose where he wanted to play, and so LeBron's been able to do that. Oscar never could. He couldn't add another. He never played with another great player, but his overall dominance of the game, that he was able to average 30 points while being the best playmaker in the league, leading the league in assists, basically, and also a double-figure rebound, he averaged a triple-double one season, but if you combine his stats, he averaged a triple-double for his first 5 seasons combined. And then, LeBron reminds me of that kind of player where he could control You know, he's not the best shooter, you know, skill-wise. Like, if you looked at Larry Bird, you say Larry Bird's skill is better than LeBron's at almost anything. Shot better, you know, more spectacular passer, handled probably better. You know, so you wouldn't point to LeBron and say, well, he's the best at this. But the way he is so dominant, you know, so effective at so many different things, and so much he can deliver to the team, whatever it needs at the time, you know, historically, to me, that ranks with someone like Oscar, who's very unappreciated because nobody's seen him and there's no film or whatever. But, you know, if you see the numbers, the consistency of that, and he was more athletic than people like to believe because they saw him later with the Bucks and he was heavier and slower. But, you know, in his prime with Cincinnati, no, he controlled the game like LeBron controls the game.
KC, a lot of Chicago Bulls ties and a lot of Chicago ties in this finals. We talked about it for a couple of podcasts, but now with Rajon Rondo being a guy who's won titles with the two most historic franchises in the game, Jimmy Butler putting all his talents on display and pretty much just seemingly running out of gas there at the end in game six. You got Talon Horton Tucker and Anthony Davis, both from the city of Chicago, who are now champions. Which Chicago angle or Chicago Bulls angle sticks out the most to you or was the most fascinating for you to watch?
Malik Allen, assistant coach for the Heat. No, wait, sorry. sorry. No, I mean, Jimmy, to me, playing at that level was probably the biggest storyline. You know, it is funny, the two of the three alphas from the lone three alpha season at the Bulls were in the finals. And then Dwayne Wade is shouting out Rajon last night on Twitter saying he was the difference in the series. So really all three alphas were represented. But, you know, I do think I got to be honest, you know, as great as Jimmy played throughout the playoffs, I did not see what he did in the finals coming. I just didn't. To put up two triple doubles and obviously to go blow for blow with LeBron in game five was pretty special stuff. And you know, obviously he deserves all the credit. He's put the work in and found the right fit for him in Miami. And I think that just kind of accentuated his best attributes. But, you know, I think the bubble in some ways benefited the Heat. They're a pretty singular minded franchise. You know, given that the bubble was kind of the great equalizer or the great, you know, open space, they were able to kind of find the rhythm in that. You know, Jimmy is already talking about how he let the Pat Riley and Spoelstra down because he didn't deliver on his promise for a championship and they'll be back. You know, I don't know. I mean, they do have a chance to add some pieces this offseason, but I don't think they'll enter next season as Eastern Conference favorites. That's just me personally. So for him to play at that level was probably the biggest storyline to me.
Rob, it's kind of interesting because this was the year that the boogeyman kind of wasn't in the Eastern Conference, whether it be 9 years of LeBron doing what he was doing, 10 years of that, or Kawhi Leonard last year in Toronto. Giannis Antetokounmpo is there, has a step to take, obviously, as we saw in the playoffs. But next year, you got the Nets and you got the you know, Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant led Nets, I should say. You got the Boston Celtics a year older, a year wiser. You got that Toronto outfit, which always is tough. And you got Giannis, who's getting ready to answer some questions. You know, a lot of people are looking forward to what this Eastern Conference is going to look like next year. And as KC said, I wouldn't be banking on Miami to make it. What are your thoughts about the landscape that the Bulls are getting ready to step into in terms of this being an open and competitive conference once again?
Oh man, quite the chasm between some of the teams you just listed and the Bulls, I would say. But I think my only thought, listening to you say that, kind of the absence of the boogeyman this year is that Jimmy kind of became the boogeyman to an extent. He was that kind of that singular focus, that singular drive, the two-way impact. The feats of Herculean strength that we saw from a guy like Kawhi Leonard last year, obviously it doesn't end in a title in the same way Kawhi's did. But yeah, like everything you mentioned, KC, just hugely impressed by all the stuff he was able to pull off. I think there's a lot more unknown than maybe we're giving it credit for. I don't know how to assess what a team like Milwaukee is going to look like going into next year, because you would have to expect that they would make moves to kind of augment pieces around Giannis. I don't know what to expect from a team like Boston that's probably going to be making more marginal improvements and just expecting another step forward for their core. But their second or third best player in Kemba Walker is a guy that the playoffs kind of showed, as impactful as I think he is and as great a player as I think he is, you can game plan for him. And he's on the wrong side of 30 and has had nagging knee issues and things like that. So I don't know how you project them. I mean, the Nets, obviously a lot of question marks around the viability of building a championship winning team around two mercurial guys and Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant on its own. And then you add in the Achilles injury for Durant, also on the wrong side of 30. So there's still so much unknown to me that I'm really not willing to bump the Heat out of the highest echelon of contention there. I know the bubble, there's a lot of randomness that goes into it. But I just don't see, I mean, you know, Jimmy aside, I just saw so much from their core that I don't know why I wouldn't take that young core of guys like Harrow, who obviously hit his share of obstacles in the finals, but I still think the takeaways from that postseason are wholly positive. I don't see why you don't look at a team with him, with a guy like Duncan Robinson. Bam, it didn't look himself after he came back. There's no way around it. But I think healthy going into next season is a real impact, you know, superstar level guy potentially as a number two option. So I'm not willing to bump the Heat out of that top tier yet. I know there's a lot of kind of too early power rankings and, oh, title odds for next year already coming out. And that conversation is already kind of being pushed. But, you know, as much as the bubble benefited them, I mean, they roasted that Bucks team in five games. Mm-hmm. And I was as high on the Bucks all year as anybody. But I'm just, I don't know. I can't put away the awe that they inspired throughout their run. I'm not saying I'm picking them to win the East next year. I'm not going to pick anybody to win the East next year, because it's what day is it? I mean, maybe we normally would, in a normal year, we might be picking an East winner on October 12th. But this year we are not. So I don't know. I think that top four is really, really wide open. It's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be fun to break down, analyze, and all of the above. Whoever the Bulls, you know, the Bulls, I think, are obviously in a different tier of competition than that. If they're in the 7 or 8 seed next year, it'll be fun to see, you know, who's knocking them out in 4 or 5 games in the first round. And that, you know, hopefully that's a step forward for the Bulls young core. And if that were to happen, and all those things along those lines. But yeah, I think the East is going to be as wide open as anything next year. I mean, the West, I think you could say the same thing with, if you expect steps forward from Denver, if you expect the Clippers to run it back and come back with a little bit more resilience, the Lakers are only getting better. So, you know, yeah, all-time level of play, I thought, in the bubble towards the end of the season. And I wouldn't expect that to drop off going in the next year, provided we actually get there and people get the necessary amount of, you know, layoff between now and next season.
Yeah, I think that Clippers thing might be cooked before it's even ready to be served, but that's something for us to converse about going forward. KC, and another, you know, I won't say stroke of, okay, this is different, but this is different. You know, Billy Donovan is the hire. He comes in and he picks a whole new staff, seemingly is picking a whole new staff. Usually we've seen transitions where one or two guys or girls stay on from the previous staff or someone that the organization is fond of. What do you make of this? Is this status quo NBA and just different for the Bulls, or is this a whole new frontier for the Karnišovas Eversley led organization?
I think it's both, Jason. I mean, this is another signal that, you know, this is not obviously the old regime, and that this new regime of Eversley and Karnišovas and Billy Donovan is going to do things how they want to. And ownership is obviously giving them the money to make whatever changes they see fit. I would assume at some point, whether that's this offseason or, you know, into next offseason, that's also going to involve, you know, some potential people in the front office or the scouting department and or a build out that department. I know the player development staff will be built out over time. So, yeah, this is a significant commitment because everybody was let go today on the assistant coaching staff except for Chris Fleming, who has obviously those previous ties to Arturas from their shared days in Denver. You know, Billy had a pretty static staff in Oklahoma City. Maurice Cheeks was one that was with him for all five seasons. There were a couple other guys that were there for multiple seasons. So I'd assume some of those guys will get looks. And really, I would just comment the only mild surprises to me, and they're mild just in the sense that I've covered this franchise for so long, like Sam, and, you know, I'm used to kind of how the old regime did business, would be Karen Stack, because she dates to, you know, 1985. She was one of Jerry Krause's actual first hires as his longtime administrative assistant and, you know, ran things in the basketball, senior director of basketball operations for a long time, handled a lot of the travel planning and things like that. And then made the switch to the coaching side a couple of years ago. You know, you'd think kind of like in the old regime, you know, maybe there'd be a position for her in the organization. I know that she loved the coaching transition and is going to be looking for opportunities to continue coaching. So that might have something to do with it as well. And then just from a strictly basketball standpoint, the only mild surprise is Nate Lenzer, who's a pretty, you know, doesn't have a huge role, but to me, it's a pretty critical role in the sense that he's very well liked by players, particularly Zach LaVine. And his option was just picked up in May. They faced that decision when Boylan's future was still uncertain. And it was, I was told it was Arturis himself who picked up that option because Nate's also a pretty strong guy in player development. So, you know, not earth-shattering news, but that, that one, I was probably leaning more towards that he would be coming back than not, you know, the Dean Cooper, the Roy Rogers and the Karen, at least Karen from a coaching standpoint, didn't really surprise me. But yeah, just this is a new era in Bulls basketball, as we've been getting reminded of almost constantly with this, with all these changes.
Sam, the picking of the coaching staff.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to that. You know, I think Casey was right, and I think the change is, you know, Billy Donovan. That I think those, you know, Karen or Nate, Arturis was comfortable probably keeping them, and left it to Donovan. And I think it's clear, and it's not, you know, untypical that, you know, a new boss comes in and says, he wants his, you know, his staff, his people. And so, you know, it sounds to me, and I really was not aware that, you know, what was going on. I haven't been following lately because of the shutdown and everything. And, you know, we're barred from the Advocate Center. Haven't been down to the United Center for months. You know, that Donovan, you know, when they replaced Boylan with him, he got, you know, a long-term commitment. They basically were saying, look, you know, you do what you want. And, you know, they gave him the go ahead to do that. And I think that, you know, that changed the landscape.
What do you think the coaching staff, the assembly of the coaching staff can denote to Bulls fans in terms of if you see it filled up with a lot of developers or people that may make this a more attractive destination? What do you think we're going to see here, Sam?
I thought that was a false narrative and really unfair. You know, they did development. They did. I mean, they had, you know, Casey would attest, Rob, you know, every time we walked in there, a coach was working with somebody, was teaching them, was doing something. And so don't put too much stake in what assistant coaches can or cannot do. Some are just there to be company of the head coach. Most of them don't work with players when they are developing, frankly, in my view, because I think most players develop on their own in the summers. I think development is something that's nice to talk about, but it doesn't happen quite as much as you'd like to think. Did they undevelop, you know, Laurie Markkanen, you know, when he went back, you know, the coaches on the staff, Nate and others, you know, who are working with players were working to develop. I mean, they were working with them all the time, you know, and we've seen that for years. So Billy Donovan is going to add the people he's comfortable with, you know, be it, you know, Maurice Cheeks, who is a Hall of Famer from Chicago. That'd be great. We love Maurice Cheeks, one of the best people around the NBA. But I wouldn't, I mean, I'm sure they'll talk about it, but to me, it doesn't signal that all of a sudden some player is going to be able to make jumpers when he couldn't make the, you know, did somebody develop Tyler Herro, or did he just come in with a great shot? I mean, you know, the kid's 20 years old or something. So, you know, I think that gets overstated an awful lot. The head coach, you know, is the president of the team, is going to make, you know, is going to set the agenda for what that team is. And the assistant coaches are there to carry out what he wants done. And, you know, Billy Donovan, you know, what this signals to me is that Billy Donovan is taking control in a very strong way. And I think that's a good thing, you know, because he's experienced, he's professional. And I think he's saying it's serious, that we're going to do it my way. And we're going to be committed to it in my philosophy. And, you know, and Arturis and, you know, Michael Reinsdorf, you know, support that. And so I think, you know, they're all, to the cliche, on the same page. But I don't think it matters that much which particular assistant comes in, because it's going to be Billy's agenda.
Now we're getting to the offseason of the NBA, or, you know, if that is a thing anymore, and KC probably wouldn't agree that that's a thing anymore, as well as Rob or Sam. Sam, I want to know from you, because you covered all of this. You've seen free agent moves. You've seen trade acquisitions. You've talked to people about Chicago as a destination. And over the years, you know, the fan base has wanted this team to swing for the fences, and they haven't always hit. What is it about this as a destination in terms of maybe the legacy of Michael Jordan, some of the stuff that is still mythical about, you know, how NBA players view the front office, even though Jerry Krause and those guys, you know, God bless his soul, aren't around anymore? Like, what about this city, the cold weather, the fact that you can go play other places income tax free, the middle of America? What about Chicago isn't attractive enough as a destination, and how should fans start to kind of recalibrate how this team should look going forward?
Well, first of all, now that Anthony Davis has won a title, it's obviously he's going to come home to Chicago to play, and, you know, because he's got his title and doesn't have to be in LA anymore, right? Isn't that how it goes now? Yeah, that's been the most misstated narrative of all. There's nothing wrong with Chicago. First of all, there's like, you know, two free agents and 30 teams. I mean, basically, you know, for 10 years, the only free agent was LeBron. You know, as Casey knows, you know, being around in 2010, the Bulls got free agents. You know, Carlos Boozer was regarded as a top free agent then. He'd been on the Olympic team. He was an all-star. Like, if you had to tell a Bulls fan, you know, we can bring you a free agent who is an Olympian and an all-star and has been in the conference finals, would you be excited? So that's who they got. That's who they got. They got some others, you know, Kyle Korver, Watson, whatever. You know, who are all these free agents going to, you know, all these cities? LeBron went to Miami. That was the big free agent. Now he's gone to L.A. That's a free agent. You know, New York doesn't have any free agents. Philly doesn't have any free agents. Washington doesn't have any. You know, where's all these free agents? There's only like one or two guys who are, quote, free agents. And so, okay, you know, Durant just went to, New York, Brooklyn, whatever. But it's not there's something wrong with Chicago, or there's something wrong with management, or there's something wrong with the other players. There's 30 teams and there's two or three guys ever who make a move. So now it's, you know, Giannis. So if he doesn't come to Chicago, does that mean there's something wrong with Chicago? No, you know, I don't know where he'll go, if he'll go. I kind of think he will go somewhere. I think Milwaukee's made some horrible decisions, contract decisions that have really tied them up and that really cripple them. But, you know, maybe he'll stay. Who knows? But at least the development part that Arturis talked about, he's right about that. How it happens is a different thing. you got to develop basically your own players, and that's, you know, okay, Milwaukee, you know, Miami was able to hit Jimmy, and he had an exceptional, you know, run for the last couple of weeks. You know, I agree with, you know, with Casey on that. And it, you know, a lot of teams in the NBA didn't see that coming, including, you know, several in which he left. So, you know, was it going to continue on? You know, who knows? Hopefully it does. You know, but he's found his right spot. And they say, well, he needs another high level player to play with. I tend to think that would be injurious, as Jimmy likes to be the guy. And, you know, that was part of the problem in Chicago. And if you put a Giannis with him, I think he would suffer somewhat. But, you know, Miami does a good job of that. But I just think it's been an unfair notion about, you know, Chicago can't get free agents. Chicago has gotten free agents. You know, Casey knows Ben Wallace, when the Bulls got him, was a top free agent, four-time defensive player of the year. Chicago has gotten guy. Powell came. When he had a choice between San Antonio, Oklahoma City, and Chicago, he came to Chicago. So the Bulls have gotten free agents. It's just Rod is the only one who really makes a difference.
Yeah, they just haven't gotten the game-changing ones that some people expect a big
one. No, they haven't gotten LeBron. LeBron's the only one in the last 15 years, he's the only one who's made a difference. Who else has made a difference? You know, Durant made a difference, except they had already won 73 games.
No, very true. No, I understand. But when you know, Bulls fans see a guy like Jimmy, obviously Jimmy had his run here, but Jimmy goes to Miami, and certain teams, I guess, certain fan bases expect for their teams to be in the running for top tier free agents, not just LeBron. And it seems as if Chicago has swung and missed more times than.
No, the Bulls, they were in the running. You know, Carmelo said he regretted not coming to Chicago. He was going to come, and then, you know, New York ended up giving more money. The Bulls have been always there for whatever little contest it's been. It just hasn't really been a contest because it's basically all about LeBron.
No doubt. Casey, now that the season, I guess, I was reading something about from John Hollinger saying that the league it was going to have 8 weeks notice ahead of whenever the next season is set to begin. And if that's the case, then that date would have to be committed to on November 23rd. What does the rest of this look like? I mean, I know we have the draft on the 18th. I know there's a lot to still parse through in terms of off seasons, but, you know, we're not going to be talking about a 6-month bubble, right? So like now today the league starts, and I'm sure before today, but officially today the league starts to look forward to what the next season is going to look like and what this off season is going to look like. What's important in terms of scheduling and timing for you and some of the dates or some of the movements that you'll be keeping up on over the next couple of weeks?
Well, the big one is, and it's less for me and more for the teams, is that they need the exact figures. I mean, they've obviously gotten some direction that it's probably not going to be, you know, a huge drop-off phased out in 1 year, that they're going to keep the BRI, you know, the BRI will be down, but keep the figures similar to the projections, you know, to set the salary cap and the luxury tax figures. Teams cannot operate until they have those numbers. So they've been given some guidance on what they are and some direction what they are, but until they get the specific numbers, really that's when the off season starts for real. So yeah, the virtual combine going on is part of it. But it's going to be you know, like everything else that's been going on, it's going to be a weird off season because it's going to be an unprecedented draft. Free agency will be free agency. I think you'll see very limited big money deals this offseason. I think you're going to see a pretty static class because of, you know, just the uncertainty of the dollars moving forward and the effects of both China and the pandemic on the league's bottom line. And then, you know, as far as the start date, I think Adam Silver's been very transparent. It's going to be about the science and trying to maximize the opportunity to get fans in arenas at some point next season. And working with Michelle Roberts on that. But it's going to be, you know, as Sam was talking about before, he hasn't been to the Advocate Center, the United Center in months. I was talking to my sisters the other day about, you know, small detail in the grand scheme of things, but this is the first time I haven't been on an airplane in 7 months, and I can't remember how long, you know. It's just all the rhythms of the NBA and everything associated with it, including our little, you know, pathetic lives has been disrupted and altered, and this offseason will be just another example of that.
There goes our airline status.
I got lifetime status, Sam. I don't know about you, man. I got lifetime status. Come on.
Nah.
Sam, you mentioned something in the beginning of our conversation, and I think we can wrap with this. There's a baseball feel to what's happening with analytics in terms of how the game is played on the basketball court, and a lot of people are grimacing at the idea of all of the uniformity that the offenses are running themselves with, and, you know, layups, freeze, and three-pointers being the focus, and the mid-range game kind of going away, even though you see some of the best players in the league who operate in the mid-range, like Kevin Durant, some of these other guys. And that baseball analogy is, you know, everybody wanted to see home runs, and now it's strikeouts or home runs and not a lot of action going on during the game, not a lot of things that make you feel like the entire game is being played. How do you think the game gets back to, or does it need to get back to, some modicum of diversifying an offensive portfolio? Or is this just the way of the world, and this is evolution and you move forward? Is it going to take a team winning that way with, you know, a star like a Jimmy Butler who doesn't shoot a lot of three-pointers? Because even LeBron, I mean, a couple of games ago went 6-for-9 in a losing effort from the three-point arc. And if you'd have told anybody that LeBron hit 6 threes in a game, you'd probably be thinking they're going to win it. But nobody else around him hit a lot of threes, and that's the way of the NBA today. What do you think is going to take to get back to that, or does the game need to get back to it?
Tony. Put about 6 extra hours on the tape machine right here.
Nah, I'm gonna keep it tight.
Hey, you got somewhat. The runway, Sam. You got the runway. Take off.
I run the risk on this of the being the old man get off my lawn stuff. So don't worry.
Rob Schaefer's right here for you.
Yeah, I'm gonna get a word in at the end.
I have to also be cautious about that. In that I do believe things evolve and things always get better, and the past is not better than the future. But that being said, I think the game really is facing an existential crisis, because I think people are looking at the NBA now and saying, and I didn't hear that much, that the game is boring, and because of, you know, I know analytics people go, well, you know, we like free throws and layups and move, you know, we like everything too. But really, it's about three. It's always been about, the evolution has been about threes and the efficiency of shooting and all that sort of stuff. And it's fine. You know, the three came into the game as a bonus. That was the idea, that it was supposed to be something special at the end of the game or the end of the quarter, or somebody got way far down. It wasn't supposed to be essentially the basis of your offense, which it is for an awful lot of teams. And, you know, that's why I was kind of, you know, like baseball. Many of us who are older grew up with, you know, baseball as the primary sport. And I miss that baseball. I like hit and run. I like stealing. I like all this stuff that they say, you know, you can't do now because it's stupid and it's inefficient. But like you said, it involves the whole game. You know, every time it's so painful to watch a baseball game where they put all the fielders on one side and the guy will not hit to the other open side, you know, and he's satisfied to, you know, take three big swings and strike out. So, you know, it's the same sort of element. So I understand that I'm a little bit in the past that, but I am hearing more people say, more than I've ever heard, that, and not just people who watch college ball who are, you know, basically boring, you know, that the NBA is becoming too predictable, and it shouldn't be with all the stars the NBA has, all the scoring, all the movement. So I don't know what, you know, I think it's time for some rule change. You know, early 2000s when they put in the zone rule, I wasn't quite, wondered about it, but it's been great. You know, it has opened things up, and it's been a boon to the game. So it's gone 20 years now, and I just think the game needs a little adjustment. I don't know whether it's getting rid of the corner three or moving out the line or something. I'm not sure what it is. You know, extending the court, which you're not going to do because they take out the expensive seats, assuming people can ever come back to the games. You know, but obviously players have outgrown the game in some sense. You know, the 94-50 was set up for guys who were 5'10". I just think something needs to be done. I'm not sure what it is, but I think the game is facing a crisis.
So, Rob, before I hand it over to you, because I know you got some things to say, probably.
That wasn't too long.
No, that was beautiful. That was beautiful. I'll say this for all the people who think the game is too predictable and, you know, you can always tell who's going to win. I want those same people to be around when it gets real random, when LeBron retires. I want those same people to watch as much NBA as they ever wanted, because you're going to be able to, you know, spin the dial and find yourself an NBA champion or different NBA finals participants, I think, when he wraps it up. And I want to see if those same people are enthused by the game. I think some of that stuff is just for people who don't already like the NBA, and then they look for reasons to not like it more. Rob, your thoughts on some of the things that Sam professed about the way basketball, or where basketball is going, I should say.
I don't know that I have a confrontational or an argumentative take.
Oh, well, then we can't do it if we're not going to argue and fake outrage each other to death. Come on, Rob.
Yeah, I should learn that by now. I just think it's a matter of differing perspectives on it. I struggle with the premise of badly needing to change, you know, basic kind of parameters with the rules of the game, because I just personally am not bored or find the game overly predictable or find things, you know, mundane in the game the way that maybe others do. And I really think that might ultimately just be a product of I only have so much of a frame of reference of what basketball looks like, and I don't have as broad a perspective on how the game has evolved over time. But the thing is, you could point to kind of empirical measures of, well, if the ratings are down, and we know it's a product of an amalgam of factors, you know, one being the competition across sports, you know, in this kind of twisted, messed up year, you know, some being the impact of the China controversy from the beginning of the year, and maybe a product of it has to do with play style or has to do with a lack of parity or things like that. So in that case, maybe rule adjustments I could totally see the validity of. I just think the conversation around analytics oftentimes gets a little bit too broadly painted as the threes, layups, eschewing the mid-range thing. Like you said, Jason, some of the best players in the league specialize in mid-range jumpers. You know, Golden State, I think, is thought of as the team that kind of ushered in the three-point boom. They were still in those years when they were at the peak of their dynasty taking as high of a frequency of their shots from the mid-range as anybody. I mean, that's a belabored talking point. That's not new info. So I just really think analytics is more thinking critically about the ways that we can maximize efficiency within the framework of the game itself. But if people think that the results are you know, for some reason, not conducive to being peak entertaining, and that there's evidence to back that up, then yeah, the construct has to change, because you can't tell people to stop thinking about ways that you can hack the game and play most to your player's strengths and things like that. And the one thing I'd nitpick about the Jimmy Butler thing, and our colleague at NBC, Tom Haverstraw, wrote a great column about this last week. He actually is an analytics darling, if there ever was one, in the NBA, yep. Because as you mentioned, Sam, analytics people, we do love free throws. It's the most efficient shot in basketball is a two-shot trip to the foul line. You know, even more than your average three-pointer, pretty much irrespective of a shooter's percentage. So there, you know, to say that the Heat aren't, you know, a modernly inclined team just wouldn't be right to me. Not only for Jimmy, but for a lot of the other aspects of how they play. When you look at the movement that they play with, the fluidity, you know, a big man like Bam, you know, there are all these aspects that make up the modern profile of a team that go beyond kind of the just threes and layups, you know, mentality. I do think it's a shame, though, that the way that it seems like this way of thinking about basketball was introduced into Chicago was in kind of the failing effort that it was last year. And I think it's maybe soured. I don't think that was, you know, in the truest sense, what we saw last year from the Bulls. you know, what analytics would dictate. But now I'm rambling. And again, I don't know what the point, I don't know what the point to be made is. It might just be a differing perspective thing. And yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'm always down to shake things up. I'm always down, you know, bring the 3-point line out at a 4-point shot. Adding a 4-point shot would probably only make things worse, to be honest with you. But yeah, it's an interesting conversation. It's one that I think is better served as a back and forth as opposed to, you know, argumentative or anything like that, which again, we're not doing, but he's done in a lot of corners. And I think that sows divide. And that's a problem that we have that, that like Michael Jordan transcends sports. So I don't know, you know, I don't know what point I'm trying to make here, but I love basketball. And yeah, like Sam said, I love to see how it evolves. The future is usually better than the past, and I'll be interested to see what the future looks like.
Now, Sam's got me thinking of like a 3-point triangle at the top of the arc instead of like an arc, because eliminating that whole corner three thing. Sam's got my mind working. Sam, thank you so much for joining us. As always, we love hearing you. We love reading your stuff. And it is a pleasure to be joined by such a legendary figure, not only in this city, but nationally as an NBA writer. So we appreciate your time, sir.
Well, it's good to talk to you, but I got way more to say.
We're going to have to do part two when I don't have e-learning in about an hour.
I'm not done. All right. Good to talk to you guys. Take care.
Appreciate you, Sam. KC Johnson, Rob Schaefer. I'm Jason Goff, our digital content producer, Tony Gill, as always. Thanking you for listening to another episode of the Bulls Talk Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning. We'll talk to you soon. But until then, be safe and take care of each other.